Welcome back to Tales of Southwest Michigan's Past. This is Michael Delaware. I am your host. Now, as many of you out there are familiar, I enjoy walking through old historic cemeteries. And in fact, I started a lot of the early history videos on my YouTube channel touring through old historic cemeteries and researching and telling the stories of the people that were buried beneath the headstones, monuments, and other types of markers out there in the various cemeteries around Southwest Michigan. And there is no more interesting story than those that are messages that are carved into headstones and monuments and other types of markers at cemeteries, because they communicate a message from the past. Now, sometimes this is done through a phrase or epitaph that is carved into the monument or marker or stone, but other times it is a message that is through imagery and symbology and understanding the language of what was being communicated by the symbology can be quite educational and interesting. And I recently did an episode on the symbology of statues in historic cemeteries. And I said in that episode that if you enjoyed that one, I would do more along this subject line. And that episode got a lot of people listening to it. I could see that in the listening count on that episode. So I thought I would return today and give you more symbology and messages from the past that you can find when you tour old cemeteries. So come along and join me. So once again, I'm going to be referring to a book called Understanding Cemetery Symbols, A Field Guide for Historic Graveyards. And it's written by a lady by the name of Twee Snyder. And she's out of Texas, but she does a lot of traveling around the world and the United States and has spent a lot of time studying the history of old cemeteries. And so she put this book out a few years back. And she's out there with a regular newsletter that you can subscribe to on her website. Her name is spelled T-U-I Snyder, S-N-I-D-E-R. And I will put the link to where you can get a copy of this book, if you're interested, in the show note description of this episode. It's definitely worthwhile if you like to go traveling around this summer and to have a copy of this book in your car. Because you never know when you might have some time to stop at an old cemetery. And it's handy to have this book with you because you'll learn a lot about what you're seeing in the symbology and imagery on many of these headstones. And there's certainly a tremendous amount of material in this book, more than I could put in a single episode of this show. But today I want to concentrate on the subject of hearts and hands and other body parts that you would find on a headstone. And there's a very specific chapter dedicated to just that in her book. And so just getting an idea of where some of the early symbology comes from when it relates to body parts being put in the imagery of a headstone or a monument in a cemetery. It dates back to a lot of the early 16th and 17th century in America, and a lot of that came from the early Puritan influence. In fact, the earliest symbols along that line with human body parts being etched into stones typically is associated with the Puritan faith, and the mortality symbols can be found on not only in America, but also in headstones in London and other parts of Western Europe. And the Puritans were big on showing skulls and skulls with crossbones. That's where those symbols originate, is from the markers that they would put on headstones with a skull and crossbones. And it was typically a message of mortality to the living that they were trying to convey, that life is short and you better behave while you're alive because death awaits you in the end, is somewhat of the message they were trying to tell people by putting the skull and crossbone and etching it into stone. But there's also other context and messaging that relates to skulls and crossbones. And they changed as time moved forward. So I'll go into a little bit more of that here in a minute. But initially, the early imagery in the 1600s with the skull and crossbone were communicating that grim message to the living that they needed to be on their best behavior while they're living, because this is what awaits you in the end. And it was just kind of a reminder of kind of an effigy to the soul and a messaging for the living in that regard. But by the 1690s, skulls were gradually displaced by other imagery, usually human faces with wings, or human faces by themselves, or just other winged effigies. And these were called soul effigies. And they could typically be regarded as, anytime you see a winged face, that was a soul effigy going to heaven. As time moved on, other types of imagery became cherubs and babies and other types of body parts that I'm going to go into right now. So to begin with, let's start with skulls and faces. Whenever you see a skull and crossbones, the earliest forms appear on American headstones are ones that are on the Puritan grave markers. And these bones are meant as a reminder of the inevitability of death. Now, when you see a skull with a crown, this message is a little bit different. It is can be a skull either wearing a crown or being placed next to a crown, and it represents the soul's triumph over death. The symbology of the skull with a crown of thorns, this usually represents the torment of the spirit. This also can relate to the crown of thorns placed on the head of Jesus. When you see a skull with wings, this stands for the soul's flight to heaven. Or when you see winged faces, this also stands for the soul's flight to heaven. Whenever you see a cherub, which is a winged baby, typically a chubby-looking baby etched into the stone as a relief or carved in as a statue of some type on a monument, and sometimes it can be a toddler with wings, this represents innocence. And you will quite often see those types of symbols and markers over the grave of a child. Another one that I see commonly over the grave of a child myself in cemeteries, particularly around Southwest Michigan that I've explored, is a lamb on top of a grave of a child. And it usually is a three-dimensional lamb carved as the headstone itself. Sometimes it's on the top of the headstone. Sometimes it is just a statue of a lamb over a grave. Now, there's also a note about hair in her book. And she says, the engravings and statues of women in graveyards quite often show them with long, flowing hair. Hair that hangs loose rather than being clipped or tied back. Long hair symbolizes acts of penance and refers to a biblical verse, John 7:37-38, in which a female sinner bathes the feet of Jesus with her tears before wiping them dry with her hair. So the symbology of the long hair refers to that passage from John. Whenever you see a statue of a cherub or an angel or a person with their arms reaching out, this is a plea for God's mercy and forgiveness. That's what that symbology means. And there's also another interesting thing about arms in front of a cross. This emblem may refer to the Franciscan order of monks. Look to see closely at the statue that has maybe the arms of the statue in front of a cross, and see if there's any wounds shown on either of the hands. If the arm is bare and has a wound on the palm, it represents Christ on the cross. If the other arm shown wears a robe but also has a wound on the palm, it stands for the stigmata, St. Francis of Assisi, because he had a stigmata. Now, there's a lot of symbology with hands in general, so I'm going to go through a lot of these that are common that you will find, and there's many in here I'm not familiar with because I've not encountered. So I'm going to give you all the ones that she lists here. So just as we make gestures when we speak to emphasize a point or clarify emotions, when hands are shown in cemetery art, they often have a message to convey to whoever sees the stone or marker. And there's many possibilities to consider when decoding the symbology of hands in historic graveyards. The hand of God. When you see a hand reaching out of the clouds, you're looking at the hand of God reaching down from heaven. So if you see that symbology etched into a stone, usually in relief on a stone, but it could be a three-dimensional object of some kind on a marker. That's what that means. The hands that mean blessing, a hand that is held upright with the first two fingers together and the other two held down by the thumb, is the Manus Dei, Latin word for the hand of God. The Manus Dei is also used in a cemetery to mark the grave of a member of the clergy. Depending on the deceased's religion, you may also see a Greek form of the Manus Dei, in which the first two fingers, along with the pinky, are held up while the ring finger is held down by the thumb. In this case, the three upright fingers stand for the Holy Trinity. When the deceased is not a member of the church, the Manus Dei is simply a way to bestow a blessing upon the living relatives who remain on earth. Hands with a heart on the palm. When the hand has a heart on the palm, it symbolizes charity and generosity. It is often associated with the International Order of the Odd Fellows. So if you see that symbol on a headstone in Southwest Michigan, chances are that person buried there was a member of the International Order of the Odd Fellows. This was a service-type club that was very popular in Southwest Michigan for many years. There's not so many of them around. I've not encountered them recently, but I do know they still exist. There's another symbol called the Hands of Cohen. If you're a Star Trek fan, you may be surprised when you go out into a cemetery and you see a pair of hands seemingly giving the symbol that Commander Spock famously gave that said, "Live long and prosper," as a gesture engraved in a headstone. It happens that Leonard Nimoy, who played Spock in the famous TV show, was Jewish. And as a child, he saw members of his church making this sign. Later, he proposed it for the famous science fiction show. So when you see Spock's hands on the tomb, you're actually looking at the Cohen hands, also called the Hands of Kohanim. This hand gesture signifies that the deceased is a Jewish person who descended from the priestly tribe of the Cohen. Incidentally, Cohen descendants are forbidden from attending funerals except in the case of their relatives and closest friends. So those of you that may not be familiar with Star Trek, it is the you have your four fingers held up and you're forming a V with the middle finger and the ring finger separated, and that is the hand of Cohen. A hand holding a cross. When you see a hand holding a cross, it is a reminder of Christ's resurrection and the eternal life of the soul. When you see a hand holding an orb, this is a figure that stands for Christ's dominion over the world. When the orb features a Latin cross sticking out of it, it's called the global Cruciger, or cross-bearing orb. When you see a hand pointing upwards, it means the deceased has gone to heaven. When you see a hand pointing down, since a hand pointing up means a person is on their way to heaven, you might be a little worried when you see a hand pointing down. While this does not imply that the person is going to hell, it often indicates that the person died abruptly and unexpectedly, such as a woman in childbirth, or as a result of some kind of accident. Hands praying. When you see hands that are clasped together in prayer, it is expressing the deceased's pious devotion, and it is a plea to God for eternal life. When you see a statue or any kind of relief engraved where somebody has hands resting on their chest, especially it's a human figure shown with a hand resting on his chest, it is symbolic of a shorthand for divine wisdom. If it's a female figure and she appears to be holding onto her garment or chest level, you may be looking at the virtue of charity, which I talked about in the earlier episode on statues and symbology of statues in cemeteries. When you see a hand resting on the neck of a figure. It's a symbolic shorthand for sacrifice and may indicate a martyred saint. Now, quite often you will see a handshake on a headstone. I've seen many of these, and it's easy to dismiss them as, oh, they're all the same. But if you look closely, you can see a lot of details with these simple handshakes that are often etched into a stone. When you see a handshake on a grave marker, try to figure out the gender of those depicted. If it's two males, then the handshake likely stands for fraternal brotherhood. And you can tell the gender by looking at the cuff that is often engraved next to the hand. If it looks like a man's shirt cuff or something like that, it is a male hand. Handshakes can simply stand for God as well, or other loved ones welcoming the new soul to heaven. Handshakes are often depicted with the limp fingers of the deceased firmly gripped by a relative, angelic being, or perhaps even God himself. If the gender shown is obviously male and female, it's most likely a marital handshake meant to show that the deceased were married. When one finger is extended, it means that the deceased was a member of the Freemasons. If a husband and wife are buried together and both were Masons, then you'll see a double Masonic handshake. And the author actually interviewed or spoke with a Mason, and she said that he told her that it meant to resemble the compass or square of the Masonic emblem by doing so. And if you look at a comparison of a handshake with one finger extended and both hands are doing that, and you put it side by side with the emblem of the Masonic compass, you can see what she's talking about. They do resemble each other. And finally, the other body part that is very common in cemeteries is hearts, and they all have different types of meanings when you see them. So it's important to kind of get an idea of the context of what they're communicating. The heart is an easily recognized and commonly used symbol for love and devotion. Like hands, however, they have many variations and mean specific things. A flaming heart with the thorns and rays of the sun behind it means the rays of God's glory behind it. When you see a heart that appears to be bleeding, it symbolizes the suffering and torment of Christ. When you see a flaming heart, it is symbolic of the human soul burning with religious zeal. When you see a heart held in hands, it's usually a symbol of a heart gently cradled in a pair of hands. It stands for love and piety. Hearts covered with ivy symbolizes love combined with enduring friendship and faithfulness. Two hearts joined together, this is the common symbol for two hearts joined together in marriage. When you see a heart with thorns, this is quite often in Catholic cemeteries and graveyards. Catholic graves sometimes feature a heart surrounded by thorns and topped with a cross. This is called the Sacred Heart, and this image is meant to remind the devout how Jesus died for their sins. And finally, another Catholic symbol that contains the heart is a heart pierced by a sword, and this is known as the Immaculate Heart of Mary. And as a symbol, it stands for devotion, sorrow, and repentance. And before I wrap up, I wanted to go into some other generalized points of information about headstones and markers in cemeteries. Have you ever wondered why many headstones seem to face east in these older cemeteries? In many Christian cemeteries, burials are oriented so that the headstone faces east. Now, this tradition ensures that people will be facing the right direction when the sun comes up on Judgment Day. In the old days, ministers sometimes chose to be buried facing west so that they would be facing their flock on the day of the awakening. So that's interesting to note when you go explore old cemeteries around Michigan or anywhere else. Another interesting thing, some of the old traditions from European churchyards, they had a strict pecking order which came to which side of the church that you were buried on. For instance, the best side of the church to be buried on was the east. The worst side was the north. The north side of the churchyard was where bastards, criminals, and strangers were buried. Suicides were sometimes buried in the north side of the churchyard. However, in the Middle Ages, they were not allowed to enter through the churchyard gates. Their bodies were instead passed over the north wall. So that's an interesting burial custom of the old European churchyards. Like many other American burial customs, beliefs about headstone directions migrated from the European settlers and is reflected in their Christian beliefs. So pay attention to the direction that a headstone is facing when you visit historic graveyards in America. And I have often noted that in a lot of the cemeteries I've gone to. It's like they all seem to be pointing the same way, which I never quite understood. And then every now and then you have one facing the opposite direction, like either they were breaking from tradition or it was a member of the clergy, which I had not noted before. Another thing that you will make note of is that on headstones where there are married couples buried, there is a left and right orientation on the headstones. Quite often, when you're facing the monument, the wife's name will be on the right and the husband's name will be on the left. If you ever attended a traditional Christian wedding, then you may also recall that the bride's family sits on the left side of the church and the groom's is on the right. So when you approach a headstone, you are essentially standing where the minister would be standing while conducting the wedding ceremony. And so that is the reason why the woman is on the left and the man is on the right. And this messaging behind that may have grown murky over time and people may have forgotten that, but that's where that tradition originates. Now, why this was originally and why the bride always stood on the left, there's been a lot of debate on that over the years. There is a claim that it is because when the woman is standing on the left, she is closest to his heart. And so that may be true. Or maybe it's just somebody's romantic notion that has entered into that tradition as some sort of folklore. There's another reasoning that is brought up about that, that the bride is kept on the left in order to keep their fighting arm free for a sword on the other side that may have been needed during a ceremony. And this supposedly harkens back to the days when brides were sometimes snatched away by competitors, even in the middle of a marriage ceremony. So the groom had to keep his sword hand free. Another thing that you will see in cemeteries is, in addition to a headstone or monument marker, you will see sometimes a footstone. A footstone is put at the foot of the deceased. You see footstones more commonly on the East Coast in the older cemeteries, but occasionally you see them here in Southwest Michigan. And usually on the footstone is a different type of engraving than what is put on the monument or headstone. The headstone will often bear the family name. Sometimes it just has the last name, for example, Smith. But on the footstone, it will have a marker that says mother or brother or father or something like that. Another thing about headstone symbology is you might wonder why some headstones have rounded tops and these older ones. It's no accident that they carved them that way, and it wasn't because of some sort of artistic whim. It was carved that way to symbolize the tablets which Moses received the Ten Commandments in the Bible in the Old Testament on. So that is the origination of that rounded top of some of those older markers. When you see a squared off top, these are markers that came along typically later and they became more streamlined in appearance. It was due to a combination of fashion and a lot of practicality. Rectangles were easier to create for a headstone than a rounded top. And finally, I'll make a note about military headstones. The old traditional U.S. military headstones have a curved arch that has distinct corners on it. And the markers are made of marble. They are 4 inches thick and 10 inches wide. and they are to stand typically 12 inches above the ground. That's not always the case because many times they're installed incorrectly, and quite often they stand a lot taller than that. Those guidelines were set by the original War Department instructions in 1873. The Civil War headstones are carved with a shield in the military headstone, and it often includes the name, rank, and home state that the soldier came from. And these were only available to Union soldiers to have that curved top. It wasn't until much later that the Confederate headstones were created. But this Civil War type headstone was used for other wars and campaigns. So you'll see the same type of stone with the marble marker in the veterans of the Mexican War, any Indian campaigns, the War of 1812, the Spanish-American War, and even sometimes used for those that served in the American Revolution. It wasn't until 1906 that Congress passed a law to provide official military headstones for Confederate soldiers. And even so, these headstones differ slightly from the Civil War markers. The tops come to a point rather than being rounded, and the shield design is omitted entirely on these headstones. Now, more than one historian will tell you that the reason they designed these markers universally to have this point on top is that the Confederates who designed it, or the former Confederates who designed it, wanted to, quote-unquote, keep those damn Yankees from sitting on top of it. So that's kind of the funny story behind that. Now, many of the modern military headstones, so if you go out to Fort Custer National Cemetery, you will see the U.S. military emblems as well as the emblem for the individual's faith on there. And there are a number of different authorized ones by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs that have all the symbols of the various branches of faith that can be etched into the military headstones for whoever's grave it is marking. So there's a whole list of that also included in her book. But that's going to conclude today's look at cemetery symbology, looking at hands and hearts and faces that are etched into stones, as well as the general types of placement of stones and shaping of stones in cemeteries, and the history and messaging behind those monuments and markers. So I hope you enjoyed listening to some of this information today. I always find it fascinating to learn this, and I certainly could do another episode or two on Twee Snider's book with all the information she provides. There's a whole chapter on the symbology of plants and flowers, which I could probably do a whole nother episode on that. So let me know if you're interested in hearing that out there. You can send me a message on my website at michaeldelaware.com. You can always reach out to me on that site. I'm always happy to hear from my listeners, and I do get messages about once or twice a week from people listening to the show, and I do appreciate it, and I try to answer as promptly as possible if it's something that I can help you with or answer a question for you. And of course, if you're interested in being a guest on my show about a history topic that you think would be interesting, you can also message me there and we can talk about it. I've found many guests that have reached out to me through that method on my website. And if you've been following along with me on my book tour of Victorian Southwest Michigan True Crime, this episode is airing on Wednesday, May 8th, and this evening I will be speaking at the Lawrence Memorial District Library in Climax, Michigan at 6:30 p.m. So if you happen to hear this in the morning on Wednesday on May 8th and you want to come out and join me and see me tonight, I will be there. I'm also speaking on Thursday evening in St. Joseph, Michigan, but that is a sold-out event. That is at a winery with Lazy Ballerina Winery, and they've sold out. But the good news is we are organizing a second event for this because there were so many people on the wait list for this one that we're going to give them the opportunity to come to the second one, and that one is going to be in June, and I'll be making an announcement on that date pretty soon and let you know when tickets are available for that. But the other free events I've got coming up on May 15th, I'll be at the Galesburg Charleston Memorial District Library on Michigan Avenue there in Galesburg. And that is Wednesday evening, May 15th. And that event starts at 6:30 p.m. And then on Saturday, May 18th, from 3 to 5 p.m., I will be presenting at All Things Serenity Yoga Studio in Union City. I'm very happy to be working on that event with the Union City Society for Historic Preservation. And that's going to be a lot of fun on a Saturday evening at about 3 o'clock. I don't know if it'll go till 5, but it'll go definitely for at least an hour or so. And I'll have book copies of my books at all of these locations and events. And then finally, in May, I have a speaking engagement on Thursday, May 23rd, over in Eaton Rapids at the Eaton Rapids Area District Library. That is on May 23rd at 6 p.m. And you can find the full list of my upcoming speaking engagements on my website. There's a calendar list there, and it is at michaeldelaware.com. Following that event in Eaton Rapids, the amount of speaking events I have scheduled are fewer because I'll be attending a lot of outdoor events and shows that are booths at festivals and things like that for most of the month of June and July and August. Occasionally, there'll be a few speaking events at libraries and bookstores and things like that that I've got on the calendar. And I've got several that are in the process of being scheduled and worked out with different locations, and as I have them firmed up, I will be adding them to the calendar so that you can check them out if you want to come out and see me. But that being said, if you enjoyed today's episode, please be sure to leave a rating or review on whatever app that you are listening on. And I hope that you have a wonderful day today. And until next time, when we take another journey into yesterday and we explore even more fascinating tales of Southwest Michigan's past. Thank you for listening.